So now we come to the post-shipment. We have already seen the pre-shipment, you know, preparations or activities which need to be done. Coming to the post-shipment, confirm that the freight forwarder has freight and that booking was made. Buyer can insist for booking advice or shipping instructions. So once the material has been booked on a vessel, normally the seller will communicate the ETA or ETD and ETA and the vessel name and the voyage number. So this is actually communicated to the buyer. And you can even ask for, like they say, buyer can insist for booking advice or shipping instructions. So if there is a booking advice which is issued by the shipping line, then the same can be actually communicated to the buyer as a proof that, you know, the consignment has been booked. Confirm with the supplier that the shipment is on the intended vessel or flight. And you have various kinds of bill of lading or airway bill. So where you have the bill of lading or airway bill which says it's on board. So when they say that it is on board, that means the material, the bill of lading or airway bill has been issued after the material has actually been loaded on the aircraft or on the seagoing vessel. So you can confirm this and you can demand this kind of a thing, because even you can have a house airway bill or a house bill of lading which is issued by the forwarder, which may be, you know, that the shipping company has accepted the cargo. It's a clean cargo, that means it's found to be in good condition, but it is yet to be put on a vessel. Ensure that the supplier has obtained the necessary pre-clearance as applicable as per the custom authorities. So normally, you know, after you get the booking, then you are submitting all the documents to the customs, and there is a forwarding of you know, procedure or a formality where you are getting a clearance, because there are certain kind of products which may be actually attracting export duty, or there may be prohibited products also which you are not allowed. So the custom clearance, they will clear that these materials are actually allowed to be exported, and they will clear the cargo, you know, for the ongoing further activities. Buyer needs to ensure that the documents received to ensure correct consignee, notify party and destination. So the documents that you have received, you know, from the seller, the non-negotiable set of document, all the information which are put there, they are correct. That means the consignee name, the notify party, the destination. This we already discussed, that in case there is any mistake, you still have time to get it corrected. So you can notify the seller and ask for the necessary correction in the documents before they are sent to the bank or they are couriered to you. Confirmation is required that the freight forwarder has sent copies of the documents to buyer and their broker. So once you know, the material has sailed, all the documents have been compiled, including the certificate of origin, etc. We generally ask for the courier details or the tracking number of the courier detail by which the document have been sent. It may take, even in international courier, sometimes 3 to 5 days for the documents to arrive. So if you have the docket number or the tracking number, you can track actually where the documents are. It's necessary that you receive the documents on time so that you don't incur any penalties or detention damage in clearing the goods. Confirm that the broker has all necessary documents. So the next thing is your forwarding clearing agent, you know, has all the necessary documents which are required to clear the consignment. Generally, for every consignment, it is not required, but once in a while, the customs may insist on things like the product literature or the end use certificate that we discussed in one of the previous slides. So you have to make sure that they have the complete set of documents, which will include the bill of lading, the invoice copy, the commercial invoice as we call it, the packing list, then the certificate of analysis. So if there is a quality certificate, the quality certificate has to be attached. The certificate of origin has to be there. And these are the mandatory documents. And as I said, then additional document could be the end-use certificate and the product literature. Ensure that the necessary preparation is done to ensure spatial clearance, for example, fumigation certificate, clearance from the Food and Drug Administration. So this is what I was talking about, that, you know, there are certain materials which can be used in the pharma or the drug industry. It can be, you know, used in the food industry and also can be used in the chemical industry. So if you are going to use it in the food and drug pharma industry, you require the FDA clearance for this material. So generally in our case, because I'm from the chemical industry, we give a declaration and we give an end use certificate where we say that because it's going to be used in industrial chemical products, specialty chemicals, we do not need this clearance. You also may require this fumigation certificate. And as I said some time ago, the pallets have to be fumigated or they have to be heat treated so that there is no fungal or infestation with any kind of parasites of the pallets. So if you are exporting, then you have to provide a proof of fumigation in the form of a certificate which is issued by the authorities or the agency which has done the fumigation. So these are additional kind of documents which may be required depending upon the nature of the goods or the product being imported or exported. Confirm arrival of the shipment with broker in a timely manner. So there is a rule that once the inward good manifest is filed by the shipping line or the airline, before that you have to file your bill of entry. If you do not do it, then there is a penalty of 5,000 rupees per day, and then I think beyond 2 days the penalty starts going up and becomes 10,000 rupees per day. So it means that, let us say a vessel has arrived and you have not filed the bill of entry beforehand, then you will be liable to pay this penalty. So it's necessary that you know exactly when the vessel is arriving and you file the bill of entry well in time before the IGM is filed, or as soon as IGM is filed, but before the ship takes berth. Confirm and ensure timely custom clearance with the broker, because you may be getting 14 days detention free from the shipping line for the container, but if your cargo lies in the custom premises for, let's say, 5 days or 6 days, normally you have only a window of 2 days for which you that no detention damage is charged. So if you are going to delay the clearance, you will also be paying certain detention charges for using the custom premises or the port premises. So it's necessary that you clear the cargo well in time. Obtain details of the shipment, trailer number, name and phone number of the inland carrier. So once the clearance has happened, then the container will be loaded onto a truck or a trailer, and you need to know exactly the details so that you can track it while it is on the road. If you are close to the port, then yes, it may take a couple of hours or maybe a day for it to reach your premises. If you are a little far away in the interior area, it may take maybe longer depending on the distance. But you need to track the consignment while it is en route. Buyer should ensure that necessary confirmation of inland delivery with inland carrier should be obtained. Common sense. One more thing I would like to just mention here. Normally the container and the goods, they are insured if your terms are CIF, which is the most common term which is being used, then they are insured only up to the port. So once the vessel offloads the material onto the port, the insurance scope ends there. You can at the most consider that till the material leaves the port, till such time the insurance cover is available. So when you are moving the material out of the port, you have to ensure that you have a a specific insurance or a open policy to cover the insurance for the material while it is in transit from the port to your premises. Number two, even if you take an insurance policy, most of the time it only covers your goods and it does not cover the container. Assume that there is an accident en route and the due to some accident or so, the container topples and the container gets damaged. You will be liable to pay the charges to the shipping line whose container you have been using. So it is necessary that you take an insurance which not only covers your goods, but also containers, covers the damages to the container or the ISO tank. ISO tanks are, like a container, but they are a tank which can carry fluids. So, and these are very, very expensive. They will be costing in a few lakhs. So, it's necessary that you take the insurance, even if it's going to cost you money, because en route, if something happens, you will be adequately covered. Incoterms and its relevance. So, Incoterms are accepted rules and definitions in international trade. These are the international commercial terms. And there are standard terms so that the understanding is very clear. If you did not have Incoterms, if you did not have international commercial terms, then everyone would interpret or have their own commercial terms, which would cause a lot of confusion. So this makes it very simple to understand, that when you are working with a particular Incoterm such as Ex Works or FOB or FCA or CIF or CFR, what does it mean? What is the obligation of the seller? What is the obligation of the buyer? And who carries the risk up to which point of time? So let's look at what are Incoterms. So they define the obligations of all parties involved in the trade. One can know who will bear the cost and what component of the cost. So for example, we said that if it is Ex Works, then the seller doesn't bear any cost. It is your duty as a buyer that you place a vehicle, collect the material from the premises of the seller and cover all the cost and the risk thereon. If it is FCA, then the seller's responsibility is to deliver the goods up to your forwarding agent. He also covers the risk up to the forwarding agent. So if there is any accident or anything, then it is the seller's responsibility. But once he delivers the material to your forwarding agent, from there on, the cost and the liability, the risk is yours. If it is FOB, then the seller will actually cover the cost and responsibility till the material is put on an airline or on a seagoing vessel. So this clear demarcation, when we say one can know who will bear the cost and what component of the cost. So clearly understood, and I'll explain it further as we go ahead. Know the risks involved and who bears the risk, that means the buyer, seller, intermediary, transporter, etc. Just use of Incoterms does not constitute a contract. So Incoterm is not a contract. Incoterms is the commercial terms which clearly tells you in a contract who takes responsibility of which cost and which risk. So, cannot override local country regulations wherever applicable. We talked about the terms of CFR and CIF. And I said that, certain countries have this requirement that the insurance for imports has to be covered by a local insurance agency. So, if this is the rule and if you have brought the material on CIF basis, it is in contravention of the local law. So in case there is any accident or anything like that, then maybe you may not be able to claim the insurance, because as per the local regulation, you were supposed to have insured the material with one of the local agency. So cannot override local country regulations wherever application. And this is one example. There could be many other areas which one needs to look at. cannot override terms of the sales contract. So as I said, that this is only one of the commercial terms which tells you exactly who will bear which cost, who will bear the risk. And we will see this, how we define by selecting the right Incoterms, we clearly define who bears the cost and the risk. Does not cover other aspects of international trade like currency, credit terms, price, payable, etc. So Incoterms are only with respect to the when the goods are being moved, who will be liable to bear the cost and who will be liable to bear the risk. But they don't talk about the currency impact. So if there is any forex fluctuation, or if I choose an Incoterm, it doesn't imply which currency we are going to trade in. Or credit terms, that means am I going to do it, advance payment or cash against document, or it's going to be a clean credit, or it's going to be letter of credit or documentary credit as we call it, or what will be the price payable. So Incoterms does not cover these aspects. So now we are going to cover the Incoterms. So FCA, which means free carrier at a designated place. And that's why the place is put into bracket. The seller delivers the goods to the location of the carrier specified by the buyer. So whenever you are using the FCA terms, you have to mention that the FCA is to which place. Now, example, I will give it to you. Even in the domestic trade, we are using the FCA terms. Now, my company has a plant and they also have certain warehouses. And our terms by default are FCA, the local transport hub. So for example, if you are shipping material from Mumbai, the local transport hub is at Bhiwandi. Bhiwandi is a transport hub where all the transporters have their godowns. So what we say is FCA Bhiwandi are my Incoterms, which means that I will deliver the material up to your nominated transporter. So if you tell me that you want the material to be delivered to your transporter by the name of XYZ, I will ensure that I'll deliver the material. The cost of delivery from my plant or from my warehouse to your transporter in Bhiwandi will be borne by me, the seller. And even the risk, so if there is any accident, any spillage, breakage, anything happening en route, that will be my responsibility. But once I give the material to the your nominated carrier and he issues a clean LR copy, that means a lorry receipt, then the responsibility has been transferred. And from there on, any damage or anything happens, it's a responsibility of the buyer. So seller delivers the goods to a location of carrier or carrier specified by the buyer. The seller bears the risk till the goods are handed over to the buyer's chosen carrier. So as I said, in this case, I bear all the risk and the cost till it is delivered to the nominated carrier of the buyer. Cost and risk of transportation is limited for the seller. So I as a seller, my cost and risk is limited only up to Bhiwandi. FCA arrangement allows the sellers to resell the goods to someone else while the goods are still in transit. So here, once I give the material to the transporter, thereafter, it is up to the buyer whether to take it to Delhi, Bangalore, Chennai, wherever he wants to, right? I have only handed, of course, I know where the goods are going because when I make the invoice, I am also saying who is the sold to party, that means to whom I have sold the material, and who is the ship to party or which is the consignee address. But ideally speaking, you still have the sale in transit where somebody can just sell, the LR copy, and the person who purchases the LR can collect the goods from the transporter at the destination. Seller makes the goods available at seller's premises. So we are talking of the Ex-Works, also in Incoterms we call it EXW for short. So when you say Ex-Works, and again you say where the material will be X Works. I have, just as I informed a little while ago, my plant and of course my warehouse. And when I say X Works, I have to be very clear whether the X Works will be from my plant or will it be from my warehouse, because both the places are 120 kilometers apart. Okay, so the seller makes the goods available at the seller's premises. So that means I have the material. Let us say I said the terms are X Works, my Bhiwandi warehouse. So then the seller, that means I, make the goods available at my warehouse. Buyer's responsibility is to collect the goods and arrange for the transporter. So that means even collecting the material from my premises is the buyer's responsibility. That means I don't pay for the transportation and loading, etc. It is the buyer's responsibility. He will place a truck. He will have people who will load the material onto the truck. And this is also the terms in global procurement. So in FCA, normally we use FCA terms in global transactions when a seller charges me air freight of, let's say, $5, whereas my forwarding agent in Europe tells me that, sir, I can do it for $3. So then I don't want to use the services of my seller because he's going to charge me $2 higher. So I tell him that, fine, you give me the Incoterms FCA. And I tell him that the term should be FCA, the place my forwarder is located. So what the seller will do is he will deliver the material to my forwarding agent at the address that I have provided. So in X Works, suppose I said X Works, and it's the same case in global procurement, then my forwarding agent will actually have to arrange the transportation and pick it up from the warehouse of the seller. So whether it is a local sale or whether it's a global transaction, the implications are the same. So the buyer's responsibility to collect the goods and arrange for the transportation. Buyer bears the cost and risk of transportation of goods to the destination location. So suppose the goods are to be picked up from, say, Spain, and they have to be transported to Mumbai. So all the cost of transporting or the ocean freight and the insurance will be then borne by the buyer, which will be, let's say I am the buyer, then I have to bear those costs. X Works translates into the arrangement carrying the minimum obligation and risk for the seller and the maximum obligation and risk assumption for the buyer. Because the seller has to only make the product ready at his warehouse or at his plant. And the buyer actually takes care of all the cost, right, from picking up the material, loading it onto the vehicles, and then taking care of the ocean freight, etc., right up to the destination. So this is one of the options where the seller has the minimum cost and minimum risk. Now we come to the third term, Incoterm, which is FAS. So free alongside ship. And again, here the place has to be designated. So seller must transport the goods all the way to the dock, close enough to be reached by the crane of the ship it will be transported in. So for example, the port is there. We have given the terms FAS, free alongside ship, and the name of the port. So here, the seller will have to arrange the transportation of the material besides the ship so that a crane can pick up the material from the truck or the trailer and load the container on the vessel. Or if it is by air, I have to send it to the airport where, the airport authorities will take charge of the material for loading onto an aircraft. The place name indicates the port where the goods are to be delivered on the quay besides the carrier ship. So this is normally the origin seaport. That means the seaport from where the vessel is going to sail. So you are going to deliver the material alongside the ship before it starts the voyage. FAS is instead used, usually used for goods sold as bulk cargo, such as petroleum products or grains. For containerized transportation, FAS is generally not applied. So as I mentioned to you, we generally use FCA or FOB. But FAS, as mentioned here, is generally used for bulk cargo, you know, where you may be using some ore or petroleum product, which is in, you know, liquid or semi-liquid form, or, you know, sometimes grains, etc., which are transported in bulk transportation. So their FAS terms are used because you need to have the things delivered alongside the ship where it is to be loaded. Thank you.